to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Author 2.0 programme, and today I'm interviewing JC Hutchins. JC is the author of transmedia novel Personal Effects Dark Art, which will be released in June 2009. He is also the author of the hugely successful podcast novels The Seventh Son Trilogy. He also builds online communities and works with the gaming industry. Welcome, JC.
Joanna, thank you so much for having me on the show. I am thrilled and honored to be here.
Thank you. So your latest book is Personal Effects Dark Art. Can you explain a bit about that?
Sure. Well, I'll explain the plot of the novel, or kind of like the concept, and then I'll get into the stuff that's really interesting. Personal Effects Dark Art is a supernatural thriller story that takes place in the United States in New York State, near New York City. And it chronicles the life of Zach Taylor, a young and optimistic art therapist who works at the very worst, the dead end of mental health care in New York State. He works for a hospital called Brinkvale Psychiatric that has a history that is so hopeless and dark that locals call it the Brink. and he is kind of a rising star there at the Brink until he meets his most recent patient named Martin Grace. Martin Grace is psychosomatically blind and doesn't want to be cured and is a suspect in a dozen serial killings in New York State. And Zach Taylor, who is very intrigued about this man because this man has airtight alibis for every single murder, and yet he doesn't want to stop. In fact, he seems to be actively sabotaging his trial by claiming that while he didn't kill these people, he is still supernaturally responsible for their deaths. And this takes Zach Taylor into a descent of mystery and intrigue as he tries to unlock the secret of Martin Grace's psychosomatic blindness and his psychoses, and along the way discovers that, you know, this world that seems very normal to him isn't normal at all and may have supernatural elements in it.
Wow, that sounds so good.
Yeah, thanks. I really enjoyed writing it. But what's really while I think that's a cool premise in and of itself, the really neat thing about Personal Effects Dark Art is that with the novel, when you buy this novel, on the inside cover is an envelope, right? And you open up that envelope, and there are tangible artifacts, such as credit cards and ID cards, photographs and legal documents, that faxes, the works that are mentioned specifically in the book, right? Mm-hmm. And if you combine clues that are mentioned in the book with clues that are embedded in these tangible artifacts that you can hold and touch, you can be propelled into another narrative, a story-enhancing narrative online through websites and email and phone calls. I mean, there's even a point in the novel where you can literally, you know, the phone number of our main protagonist is mentioned in the novel. And using a clue mentioned in the book, you can not only call his number, his cell phone number, but access his voicemail and listen to messages from other characters in the book. It's really, really cool.
That's amazing. It's just brilliant. And so I have been interviewing some other people about the definitions of kind of cross media, but I had thought it would be just online stuff, but you're actually talking about physical objects as well, which I didn't realize. How did you arrange all of this stuff?
Well, I wish I could take credit for the initial idea. I had been following what is called the alternate reality game space for some time, and boiling it down to its most simplistic. An alternate reality game is basically an unfolding narrative, nearly always told online, and nearly always for free, where participants solve puzzles and pursue, become active participants in this unfolding narrative online, kind of like a scavenger hunt, right? So I was familiar with alternate reality gaming, and I was familiar with some of the people who were responsible darn near 10 years ago now for kind of inventing this genre of storytelling, one of them being a guy named Jordan Weissman, who helped create what is now called The Beast. It was the first really big alternate reality game to promote the book, to promote the movie AI, a Steven Spielberg picture. And so, you know, I'd been reading up on alternate reality games, and then serendipitously, I receive a call from a friend at St. Martin's Press, an editor there, who says, hey, you know, we are working with a guy named Jordan Weissman, and my jaw hit the floor, and I said, yeah. Yes, uh-huh. And they said, and we, and they're working on an alternate reality game meets novel called Personal Effects, and we're looking for a writer, and, you know, I really like your stuff. Jordan Weissman has listened to your stuff, and he really likes it. Well, do you want to get involved with this? And I said, sure, of course. And so the kind of underpinning concept of a transmedia story was well in place, and in fact, it's mission critical to the experience. It was part of the conception from the beginning, from Jordan, and then I was brought in and using a very loose outline of what he wanted to kind of the kind of characters he wanted to see and some of the plot lines that could be used for the first novel. I took that and worked very closely with him basically invented the plot and many of the characters seen in Personal Effects Dark Art.
Wow, that's amazing. And can you explain a bit more about the Brink website itself? Because people can actually interact with that, can't they?
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So, there are websites that are mentioned in the novel, and then there are websites that are not mentioned in the novel but can be found through kind of curiosity, right? Where, for instance, Zachary Taylor, our protagonist, he has a girlfriend named Rachel Webster, who is a video game blogger, and in the book we actually learn the website address of her video game blog, which is PixelVixen707.com. Now, if you visit PixelVixen707.com, like right now, it is live, and Rachel Webster has been blogging there for months, actually. And she, and if you were to visit, you kind of poke around her website, you would organically find links out to Zach Taylor's MySpace page, the fictional newspaper that Rachel Webster works at, and the Brinkvale Psychiatric website, which is found at brinkvalepsychiatric.com. Now, all of this is online right now. It's out in the wild, and listeners can check it out. And if you visit brinkvalepsychiatric.com, you can learn about the hospital. You can meet some of the staff there, right, with staff biographies, including Zach Taylor's. But there was also a place for a patient gallery, a patient artwork gallery. And as I sat down to try to think of ways to promote Personal Effects Dark Art, I realized that we had an opportunity here to not just, fill that patient gallery with interesting artwork that, we could hire people to do, right? But we have, I have a legion of fans who are all awesome and very, very creative. And why not create an opportunity for them to become patients of the Brink? And so I created this promotion that's still rolling out and will continue to roll out, called Commit Yourself to the Brink, where my fans and anyone in the world can visit my website. The URL for this page is jchutchins.net/thebrink, and there they can create a fictional patient profile, they can create a fictional patient name and a date that they were admitted, and because they are going to be fictional patients of art therapist Zach Taylor, they upload a piece of artwork or a creative photograph that they've taken, and that artwork appears on the Brinkvale Psychiatric Patient Gallery. And patients and people who commit themselves to the Brink receive via email their commitment papers, a bona fide high resolution JPEG that looks like a official paperwork from Brinkvale Psychiatric that includes all of the information that they provided, such as the patient's backstory, the patient's name, all of that stuff. And that is something that they can either, you know, print out and put on their wall, or they can post on their MySpace page or their blog or something like that. So it's a really, really a groundbreaking and fun way to, you know, for fans to get involved, express their creativity, and actually become a part of the personal effects universe.
I think it's brilliant, a brilliant idea. And I've been on there and had a look myself, and yeah, I've seen some of the art. It's so fantastic. So I guess the question there, you know, is the basic text novel dying or dead already? You know, is the future of text, you know, merging with an online experience?
It's a really good question, and it's one I've been thinking about quite a bit. One of the things that I've really enjoyed doing over the past 3 years, playing in the social media and new media spaces, being a fiction storyteller, is to not just, you know, present the text of a novel. In my case, it's, you know, presenting the text of a novel in audio form as a podcast novel. Mm-hmm. But in last year, I decided to create a spin-off series, a spin-off short story anthology from my Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy. This project was called Seventh Son Obsidian. And what I did was is that I asked, you know, several authors in the podcasting space if they wanted to play in my universe and write a story that takes place, you know, during a nationwide crisis that took place during the Seventh Son trilogy, which they said, sure, no problem, which was good. But then I thought to myself, you know, why limit yourself to one media, and why limit yourself to seven contributing authors? Mm. Again, looking towards the power of community, I realized that we could bring in the power, the creative power of the fans, and make them not just spectators, but content creators, and blur the line between audience and author. And so what I did was, is I solicited, I asked them to participate by, you know, calling a crisis hotline and pretending that they were a part of this crisis, right? Mm-hmm. And I asked them to create videos, right, with their cell phones or with video cameras, videos that documented their lives, their fictional lives during this fictional crisis. And I rolled out all, and I received more than 100 pieces of content for that, and I rolled it all out in the Seventh Son Obsidian experience. Well, you combine that with, at the time, I was also working on Personal Effects Dark Art, where, you know, the story is unbound. It goes far beyond the pages of a book. And it's got me thinking quite a bit about what the future of fiction is. I don't think that the traditional text novel, and not just in text form, but in print form, mm-hmm. I don't think that the print novel that stands alone and is a standalone experience in your hand will ever die. I think that there will always be a great demand for that. But I also think that as technology pushes forward, and as, frankly, I think that, you know, wireless connectivity to the internet and handheld devices become more powerful and can talk to the internet, I think that, the future of publishing and some really groundbreaking progress will be made via these handheld devices like an iPhone or a Kindle or a device that we just haven't seen yet, mm-hmm. in which you do read that text on the screen, but there will be opportunities, much like in a Personal Effects Dark Art, there will be opportunities for you to leap beyond, like with the tap of a button, leap beyond the pages of the so-called pages of that book and experience another part of the story in a media that may be more resonant than words. Now, work with me here, because my thought here is that there I could write... You know, the old saying is that a picture is worth a thousand words, which basically means that you can't. It's so difficult to capture the same kind of emotional impact and resonance of a photograph with words. It's just, you know, photographs deliver information and emotional impact and stories in a completely different way than a text you know, than a text story would. Same thing goes with video. There's an immediacy there, right? And the same thing with audio. My audio, you know, the sound of my voice and the resonant and the lilt or cadence that I deliver is a very different experience than merely reading those same words on the page. So I think that the future of fiction, which we will begin to see more and more of probably in the next 5 to 10 years, and I hope to be, you know, leading the band like a crazy person, is to tear down these walls between these different media and use each media the way, you know, it's best used for the story. For instance, we read about a surveillance footage in a novel, right? And yeah, rather than meticulously describe that, if it's more spooky or more compelling to actually tap a button and see that video, mm-hmm. Mm. Why not? Why not do that? Why not hopscotch like that? Hopscotch media. And so that's where I think all of this is eventually going, which is really, really exciting because it taps into the strengths of these media in a way that a simple text-based experience may not.
Mm, no, I think it's just so brilliant. So just, I guess, stepping back a bit, you've mentioned Seventh Son there, so we better talk a bit about that. So you delivered, I guess, Seventh Son as a podcast, and it's available as a free audiobook. Can you just explain a bit about that project and how you use those podcasts to reach, I believe, 50,000 people in your family?
It was a Christmas miracle, and I'm the first person to be completely blown away by the success of the Seventh Son trilogy. What happened was is that years ago I wrote a very, very long manuscript called Seventh Son that I tried to find a literary agent for. And I couldn't, you know, this is how the publishing game is played. You find a literary agent who represents your work and has the connections in the publishing industry to be an advocate for it and find an editor who will, you know, eventually hopefully publish the novel. Mm-hmm. Well, if acquiring a literary agent is, you know, the first step towards success and I couldn't obtain that, I was really, really distraught about it. This was in 2005. And, around that same time, I was also listening to podcasts, and I was listening to this strange thing called podcast novels. What is this? And a couple of guys, three trailblazers named Scott Sigler, T. Morris, and Mark Jeffrey were releasing their novels as free serialized audio stories, you know, a chapter or two in audio form every week for weeks on end. And the more I realized that Seventh Son didn't have a future in print, I realized, well, if I can't sell this book, I might as well share it. Mm. And I chopped up this manuscript into thirds, the first act becoming book one, Descent, the second act becoming book two, Deceit, and so forth. Mm. I decided to release them in podcast form. What I did was I also made sure that I relentlessly promoted this work in the online space because I wanted to make sure that people enjoyed the work. And the only way to enjoy it is to know about it. And so I was pretty shameless in my self-promotion. Mm-hmm. And received, you know, and got some really interesting guest stars to appear, as in cameos in the novel, such as a science fiction star named Nathan Fillion, from Firefly, and Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica, and several others. And what I did was is that I just shook my fanny as hard as I could, and I told the story the best that I could.
Yeah.
And you know, I kind of looked up at one point and I had, you know, tens of thousands of listeners, and I realized, well, maybe I could, you know, reach out to agents again.
Yeah.
And I did, and I did, and was able to acquire one pretty quickly after that. And then she was able to help champion Seventh Son at St. Martin's Press, where I was also I was working on Personal Effects Dark Art at the time with them. And so we had a nice inroad there, and we were able to cut a deal there. And I am very proud to say that we are also in the very, very last stages of negotiations and chatting with Warner Brothers for an option for the Seventh Son trilogy for film development. So all of that has come from me hitting a fat white guy in the United States hitting record and talking to himself in a room for hours on end.
And that, it's such a great story. You know, it's just fantastic because I've been talking to people, I guess, a bit about building your platform before you pitch, you know, and that's exactly what you've done. You built that platform first, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And it wasn't a conscious decision. I mean, I had kind of hit a wall in late 2005 where I was convinced that Seventh Son would never, ever see print and that my aspirations were more of just sharing the book. But finally, after I hit 20,000 listeners or something, you know, it was kind of like in one of those old Bugs Bunny cartoons when the piano falls on the character's head.
Yeah.
Well, it took a piano, you know, a cartoon equivalent of a piano falling on my head for me to realize, hey, wait a minute, maybe I should pursue publication again. So it was... everything that has come since has been a really, really interesting and flattering, crazy ride like I said, at first I had no aspirations to get this thing in print because I didn't think that it had the legs to make it. So I'm really proud of what's happened and how my fans have played a critical role in making it happen.
Mm. And I just have another question here is your voice. You have this amazingly expressive voice. Did you develop your voice for your podcast or have you always spoken like this?
Well, first off, thank you. I just blushed. Thank you so much. I do have a face made for radio, so I work it as best I can. No, but for me, it was, if you were to listen to, let's say, the very last episode of the Seven Son trilogy, and then listen to the very first episode of the Seven Son trilogy, you would absolutely hear a very clear difference in the way not only, do I read my work and perform the characters, but also this, like, conversational kind of stuff. And that is a direct result of, 2 years, working in the podcasting space and finally finding a comfort zone, talking into a microphone, like I said, like being a guy in a room by yourself, that can be difficult at first, but with consistent practice and consistent output, unless you're, an idiot child, you're just going to improve, you're going to improve dramatically, organically.
Mm. No, that's great. It's so cool listening to you. It's really fun.
Thanks. Thank you.
Well, that's all right. So as part of Seventh Son, you also created this Ministry of Propaganda, which is another great idea, which has your fans spreading your word, I guess, in missions. So can you talk a bit about that and about community?
Sure. Well, what happened was is that during my release of Seventh Son, particularly book one, I was able to, a couple of fans reached out to me and said, hey, I've created artwork inspired by your book. Would you like to see it? And I was like, hell, I mean, I don't want to just see it. I'm going to post it on my website and brag about you. Of course, please send it. And so again, this kind of organic realization that the more I thanked people publicly for their artistic contributions, the more contributions rolled in.
Mm.
And I made this connection of, people want, and I'm not going to say that Seventh Son is a phenomenon in any kind of way, like a cultural phenomenon, but within the microcosm of podcasting from 2006 to 2007, it was on fire. People were talking about it, and I'm really, really thrilled about that. And I realized that, people wanted to be a part of this. And so as I moved forward into book two of the trilogy and was acquiring these really awesome guest cameo stars like Nathan Fillion, I realized, I've been writing press releases all by myself and reaching out to media outlets all by myself and telling my personal friends about this all by myself. But wouldn't it be cool if I asked everybody to do that? And what if they did? What if 100 people in, 2 heads are better than 1? What would 100 heads be? And so I did just that, and I created the Seventh Son Ministry of Propaganda, which is led by a mysterious Russian woman named Natasha, who actually records audio dispatches is, and commands Seven Sun fans to participate in these online street team-like missions. And one of them, one of the first ones was, you know, hey, why don't you burn the first episode or two of Seven Sun to a CD? They had burned 10, maybe. You know, that's a buck or $2 worth of you know, materials, and give them out to friends. I had a listener in the UK who burned 300 copies.
Wow.
And gave them out as, like, you know, value, like, hey, you know, you're at my store, you're at my auto shop, while you're here, take this free audiobook. And I mean, it's just like, that's insane. That's so cool. And that furthered my conviction that we as storytellers, it doesn't matter if you're Brad Pitt, Steven Spielberg, J.C. Hutchins, or the next, you know, or a 14-year-old kid, if you're a storyteller, you cannot survive without your story being heard. A story is nothing without its audience. And if you woo your audience with the quality of your work, they will be willing to spread the word about your work. And if you do that, then it's like, if Seven Sun bombs in print form when it comes out in the fall of later this year, it's, you know, I'll be disappointed, but my God, I mean, I've made 50,000 friends out of this. I mean, how cool is that? How blessed is that? And so, you know, that is, and so building a platform, but being very genuine about it and being sincere about it, I think is the most important thing. And if you can do that and woo your audience with killer content and genuine enthusiasm, not only for your own work, but for their active participation in spreading the word, you may very well be golden.
Mm. And what you're talking about, I guess, is the kind of social networking idea that some of these other sites like Facebook and Twitter kind of do, isn't it? So do you use those sites as well? I know you have a Facebook group for the book and things like that. Which social networks do you think authors should be using?
Right. There are a great many. And it's very, and you, and this online space, I mean, make no mistake, and I'm very sympathetic to this. If you're not online savvy and you don't, you know, like if you've never visited MySpace, you know, it's intimidating. It's intimidating to get into this space, but I want to make something clear, is that you don't have to become a stone cold expert overnight. I certainly didn't become a stone cold fiction writing expert while I was writing Seven Sun. I still don't think I'm an expert, but I certainly improved as the story went on, and that's how any kind of creative or educational pursuit is, and that's what you have to do when you dive into social media, is to, you know, just put your toe in, start small. Don't think that you have to master this thing right away. If there were three sites that I would personally recommend, or three services personally to recommend, it would be MySpace, mostly because there are still a great many people who use MySpace, and having a MySpace profile can't hurt you. Also, Facebook clearly is the up and comer here, and I assume will eclipse MySpace within a year or two. And it's frankly a much cleaner and easier to use website. And I use MySpace to, you know, give updates to my fans there. But Twitter is also a very, very easy to use social media tool. It's kind of like a micro blogging service where you can kind of post, you know, whatever you like, you know, updates about yourself or promotional antics, such as I do, on this service called Twitter. And people who are your fans, they are called followers. Your followers will receive these messages, and if you follow these people back and become fans of them, you will receive their messages as well. So what can happen is that you can either use Twitter as a conversational tool for what very public one-on-one conversation with someone, right? Because everybody can see these messages. Or you can do it, as I often do, in addition to conversation, I also use it as a propaganda platform, frankly. And it's basically a megaphone that I use to tell my fans who are on Twitter about, you know, the latest crazy thing that I've got on my mind. And wouldn't it be cool if I could get your help to do that? And they say yes. And the next thing I know, I'm doing something crazy. So those are the three services that I would recommend: MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter.
No, that's great. And I guess you talked a bit there about your marketing that you do, and you know, maybe marketing's too official a word, like you say, crazy stuff. How did you learn about that stuff? Do you just make it up as you go along, or do you have like a marketing background, or how do you know how to do these things?
I make it up as I go along. There, like, I don't have a master plan written down. To be honest, I used to be a newspaper reporter, almost 10 years ago now. And so, you know, I was kind of initially exposed to how people would present pitches to me, right? Because I was, you know, like, people would pitch to me. And then I left the journalism business to write Seventh Son, and I had to find a job to, you know, to pay the bills. And so I took a job writing basically product brochures for a local company here in South Florida, that also kind of, you know, it's like if you're writing promotion, if you're writing these kind of product brochures, you want to make the product sound really, really special. And so it's like, you know, I mean, I made vacuum cleaners sound so interesting. I mean, like vacuum cleaners would walk on water when I wrote about them. I mean, that's just how awesome. I really put my back into it. But you know, there was no kind of official or premeditated learning of marketing there. Mm. It was only after I began to consider releasing my content in podcast form and then actually start doing that in the online space where I began to watch people, right, and watched what they did and saw what they did right, and then made special note of all the things that they did that weren't right, that could be improved, and then just gave my personal spin on it and continually tried to push the envelope, because I knew that, you know, like, you know, I can woo you twice with the same kind of promotion, but if I'm asking you to do it a third time, you're less inclined to do it because, you know, been there, done that. The best kind of promotions are something that is familiar and yet very, very new, right? So I'm always kind of trying to like elbow my way to the head of the pack promotion wise, and that was all kind of organically learned, again, with a great many times it just being the cartoon piano falling on my head and me realizing, wait a minute, you know, I've got this set of resources here, or I have this set of tools over here, or I'm seeing this happening over here and no one's doing it right. Let's see what I can do with that. And I call this passion for trying new things and being an innovator, with your marketing and your promotion. I call it spontaneous human promotion. And the philosophy is basically like, don't poo-poo those crazy ideas that pop in your head. Those crazy ideas, you never poo-poo those crazy ideas when you're writing a fiction story. And you know, like when you ask yourself, well, wouldn't it be cool if? Well, you know, those ideas can happen with your promotional efforts too. And they happen quite a bit for me. And I have learned very early on not to ignore those and to listen very carefully to those and to do the math. I call it doing the math and doing the math. When you have one of those moments, you spend about, you know, between 5 and 20 minutes noodling it over. And if it really continues to resonate and occupy space in your brain and you're still passionate about it, then I feel like you're nearly ethically obligated to pursue it because you know, it's going to be awesome. And that's really what all this is like, let's do awesome things to keep people entertained and keep people engaged.
And you, I mean, you know, I don't want to ask about money, but I mean, you didn't have a budget for all of this marketing, did you, when you were first starting anyway with your podcast? These are just ideas and, I guess, you know, things that you've done that haven't involved a lot of money. I'm just thinking for authors who are listening, thinking, well, you know, he's got these big budgets now, but you didn't at first.
Oh, Christ, I wish I had a big budget now. I don't have a big budget. No. Yeah, and to be absolutely clear, I mean, I haven't spent one penny on advertising through any of this. So this is not an official kind of like dun da da, like you visit a website and there's like a banner ad that, you know, that you would click to be sent to my site. I've never, you know, I've created banner ads, but I've never paid anyone to have them put on their websites, right? So what I do, you know, for creating and hosting a website, and in my case, creating and hosting a podcast novel monetarily. Now, there's a difference between sweat equity and time spent, right, versus money spent. But with the money, I mean, you can roll out a podcast and a video podcast and on a website for $15 a month. I mean, you know, that's not $15 US, and that's nothing. I mean, that's throwaway money. That's pizza money, right? And so when you know, if you kind of perceive it, you know, in terms of that, and you realize that, well, wait a minute, well, let's not even think about money. Let's just think about really creative ways to work around the fact that I'm broke.
Yeah.
You know, and that I'm broke. I'm broker than broke. Let's see what we can do here. Then suddenly, you know, it's kind of like desperation fuels inspiration. It's just one of those things. And you hear about this in independent filmmaking all the time. You know, I used to be a newspaper reporter, and one of my favorite interviews that I ever did was with horror director John Carpenter, in which he said, the smaller my budget was, the better my movies were, because we were forced to be more inventive with our storytelling. And that's the same way that I perceive promotion. Now, as I have moved forward with personal effects, dark art, I have made larger marketing expenditures for things that I thought were worth it, or things that I simply knew I could not do without spending money. One of those things is this really awesome and really innovative new book trailer series that I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. And many of your listeners who are familiar with social media and online book promotion have probably heard or seen a book trailer, right? It's just like a movie trailer, except it promotes a novel. And a great many of them aren't very good. I say that with all the kindness in my heart, because most of the time it is the author himself or herself creating that video trailer, right? And an author is not a trained video professional, right?
Mm, yes.
And they are not fluent in the language of film. Now, what I, you know, have had enough video editing experience and have seen enough action pictures and horror movies to you know, have a sense of timing and pacing and editing savvy. And what I did was I reached out to an editor friend of mine and said, hey, you know, I want to do a brand new kind of way to market books via video. It's going to be like a book trailer, right, where we kind of talk about, where we kind of, you know, promote the mood and the vibe of the book. But instead of, like, you know, talking in a world where there are clones, you know, nothing like that. That's stupid. That's played out. That's boring. That's predictable. Let's have people who have read the book, record themselves in video form endorsing the book, right? So suddenly you've got a video endorsement from someone who hopefully the audience has heard of, or a property that the audience has heard of, right, is wrapped around this really intense, like, no kidding, silver screen level, quality kind of experience. And what I've done, and this is no lie, I mean, is that, you know, me spending time, no money, spending time reaching out to, you know, horror and thriller storytellers like the co-director and the co-writer of the Blair Witch Project. He has done a video blurb for me. New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler, he has done one. This evening, on the evening that we record this, Victor Miller, the creator of Friday the 13th, the guy that created Jason, you know, the hockey mask killer, right?
Yeah.
He has done one, and that's going to be released into the wild. I've got folks who, you know, have directed horror movies and written horror movies. I've got some horror actors and actresses that are reading the novel right now and who may also participate. And what did I do? Well, I had to ask them for their participation, which costed nothing. If they needed a video camera, well, I just went out and I bought a what is called a flip cam, right? $120 camera, US, and I mailed it to them with a return envelope inside, and they recorded themselves, and then they mailed it back to me, right? And then all of this really kind of spooky mood video footage that prefaces and concludes the video trailer. This was all stock footage that I had to buy from a service called iStockPhoto, right? Mm-hmm. So that was the biggest, to date, that has been the biggest expenditure was basically, you know, taking, whipping out my credit card and having them take $600 off of it. But if you were to look at this trailer, you would, and if you knew the video industry and you knew what it really costs to make one of these things, you know, what typically would cost upwards of $10,000 to do, I was able to do $600, you know. And, yeah. And I think that these video trailers and the testimonials from these amazing entertainers is worth it, not only because it's a first and not only because it's cool as hell to have Victor Miller on, you know, endorsing your book, but because it's something really, really different. And it's easy for people to share with their friends because, you know, you put it on YouTube and then suddenly, you know, anyone in the world can put it on their blog. And that's what, and so I thought that that was money well spent. But aside from that really big expenditure of $600 to do that, nearly all of my promotional efforts are, you know, $100 or less.
Mm, yeah, and I've watched some of those videos, so yeah, and that's why I thought you had a big budget because they look so good.
do you think and I kind of, and let me ask you, do you think that it looks that footage and that experience looks well worth more than $600?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, then we're good. Yeah, then the illusion, which is what storytelling is, frankly. Mm. You know, novels are put together with bubblegum and a prayer. and same thing with this is that, you know, like that's exactly what we did, is that we were very, very judicious in the footage that we found, and we realized that, you know what, this thing is so hot and sexy that it's okay to spend this kind of money because people are going to talk about it, and people are going to come away from it thinking that this J.C. Hutchins guy had a huge budget when it's obviously that I didn't.
Yeah. No, that's great. So we're almost out of time. We've just got a couple more questions. So I guess what would be your advice for authors who are kind of sitting here looking at you, and you've kind of made it now, you've got the publishing contract, all these exciting things going on. How long did it take you? And, you know, is persistence the most important quality?
Yes, yes. Persistence and fearlessness. Again, you know, I mean, I invite people who are listening, who are authors, to think back to when they were actually writing, let's say, their most recent work or their most recently completed work, right? It didn't write itself.
Yeah.
The only way that it got done was you sitting in the chair and hammering away at it and spending lots of sweat equity and risk. I mean, there's risk involved in writing a novel especially if you don't have a contract for it or you don't have an agent, if you're trying to break into this business, it's a risky endeavor because you're not getting compensated for your work and you may never. You know, that's the crazy passion project that is writing, right? Now, just kind of apply that to this new world of promotion or platform building or whatever you'd like to call it, where, you know, you weren't a master storyteller when you first started telling your tale. And the only way to tell the tale was to do it. And to do it persistently and consistently. And that's what I do. And that's what I think is probably the key to all of this is to, you know, explore slowly if you choose, but be sure that you're always exploring in this space and figuring out ways to get the word out about your work. Because if you are looking for an audience, the only way, I mean, like they are not going to come to you. They will not come to you. This is why there are advertisements, right? Because people need to be told about something new.
Yeah.
And if you can figure out innovative and creative and fun ways and enthusiastic ways to reach out to people, or if you're blessed enough to have an audience, have them help you reach out to new people, then you are 10 steps ahead of every other author out there. You know, a complete aside, and I'm not bragging when I say this, but there's a reason why I am so comfortable talking to you and answering all of these questions, questions that I didn't read beforehand. I mean, we're just winging it here, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because, I mean, and I haven't, you know, my books aren't in print yet, right? And yet I'm so comfortable promoting my stuff. I've done more than 100 interviews just like this in the past 100 interviews. That's nuts, right? And you know, and I've been on video and da da blah 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 blah, and you'll be on the BBC and talk to the New York Times and da 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 da. And I don't say any of this to brag, but I say it because this is the only way to make it happen, is to make yourself available for opportunities like this. And I think that if you as a listener are in that space where, you know, you're just dying to share, you know, your story with the world, well, as long as you're willing to invest the time and some money, but mostly time, you can do it. And you can build that audience and build that fan base and build the you know, And the professional experience that comes with that.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for that. And just remind people again how they can find out about you and your books.
Sure. Well, your listeners can find me at my website, jchutchins.net. That's jchutchins.net. And there they can find links to my book that'll be coming out in June, Personal Effects, Dark Art. And then book one in the Seven Sun Trilogy will also be released in print this fall by St. Martin's Press. And they can find information about that there, too.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, JC.
Oh, I am thrilled. I am so thrilled that you had me on and these awesome questions. And I hope I didn't bore your listeners with all my blathering.
Absolutely not. Well, you know, all the best. And I know you can pre-order the books on Amazon now, so people can pre-order them.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, thanks again.
Thank you. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.